from Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org. I'm Nicole Ogrisco with the news on this Monday, September 23rd, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Uptake of body-worn cameras is on the rise for law enforcement agencies in Maine, according to a recent study commissioned by the state attorney general. About 70% of law enforcement agencies in Maine that responded to a recent survey are using the cameras. 3 years ago, roughly half of all Maine law enforcement agencies had adopted them. Researcher George Shaler is with the University of Southern Maine's Catherine Cutler Institute. He says the cost of adopting body-worn cameras is still a big barrier for local law enforcement, particularly for smaller agencies.
This is not a one-time expense, because one of the ongoing expenses associated with body-worn cameras is data storage. I mean, body-worn cameras generate an incredible amount of data, and that needs to be stored somewhere.
It's up to each local law enforcement agency to implement their own body camera policy, but the study suggests that Maine consider adopting a set of minimum statewide policy standards so that the public can expect some consistency among different local agencies. Three more counties in Maine now have mosquito-borne disease activity. The Maine CDC says four wild birds tested positive for West Nile virus in Piscataquis, Sagadahoc, and Washington counties. West Nile has also been confirmed in a sample of mosquitoes in Waldo County. Mosquito pools in Penobscot County have tested positive for the virus known as Triple E. State health officials are urging the public to take steps to prevent mosquito bites by wearing repellent, long sleeves and pants, and draining artificial water sources where mosquitoes breed. Climate change has so warmed the southern Gulf of Maine that dense kelp forests are unsustainable. But new research shows that critical ecosystem still thrives further north. Peter McGuire has more.
Findings from the Bigelow Laboratory's 17-year study show a rapid decline in kelp up and down the Maine coast. Kelp rebounded after being devoured during a green urchin overpopulation in the 1980s and should have been stable and healthy, says Bigelow scientist Doug Rasher.
And so we were quite surprised to see that kelp forest health had declined in the northern part of our state and that kelp forests had collapsed writ large in the southern part of our coastline.
Kelp are a foundation species that create an ecosystem by providing food and habitat, but they need cold, nutrient-rich water that is no longer found in parts of the Gulf of Maine. Meanwhile, red algae have moved in and taken over kelp habitat off the southern coast. But kelp forests north of Penobscot Bay should stay healthy for decades, Rasher says. He hopes the study will offer a baseline for more research and guide management and conservation of remaining kelp. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
A federal grant will allow Maine to add capacity at two veteran cemeteries at the northern and southern ends of the state. The Mills administration announced last week that the state has received a $2.6 million federal grant from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to expand veteran cemeteries in Springvale and Caribou. Ryan Lorraine, a spokesperson for the Maine Bureau of Veteran Services, says the money will allow the Bureau to add more than 1,400 spaces for federal 1,400 spaces for funeral urns at the two cemeteries, plus more than 500 cremation plots in Springvale.
There's certainly a growing need across the state of Maine, and particularly in these two different areas. People ideally want to be buried close to home, and this provides the opportunity for veterans to have that.
The Bureau of Veteran Services also manages two other cemeteries in Augusta. Middle and high school students in Lewiston will begin learning how to administer the nasal spray overdose reversal drug, naloxone, this week. Under a state law passed last year, training must include standards from a nationally recognized program and be taught by a qualified instructor during the school day or as an extracurricular activity. Jake Langless is superintendent of Lewiston Public Schools.
We have the naloxone on site. We have a distribution plan. And we have adults trained to provide training to students. We've also messaged out to families because there's an opt-out component to this, and we've had some families say, I don't want my student to be trained in that.
Under the new law, all public schools must offer naloxone education to secondary students, in addition to CPR and defibrillator training. The Maine Department of Education will hold a series of listening sessions this week to hear from local school officials about the state's school funding formula. Carol Bousquet reports.
Representatives of the department and the Maine Policy Research Institute will meet with superintendents, teachers, and other stakeholders to talk about how the funding formula aligns with current needs at schools across Maine. Lewiston Superintendent of Schools Jake Langless says he believes the formula should include some kind of metric that weighs a community's capacity to raise additional tax dollars.
I really think that the model asks too much of lower income communities. Lewis Public Schools is the highest receiver in the state of Maine, but we also have by far the highest level of need because of community and demographics and poverty.
Langless says Lewiston's limited commercial base and low-income demographic place a burden on taxpayers to support vulnerable students in the district. He says it took 3 votes for the community to pass this year's budget. The department will present its findings on the funding formula to the legislature in March. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Carol Bousquet.
Many of Maine's cranberry growers are on track for a strong harvest this fall. The relatively steady rain and milder summer temperatures are ideal conditions for cranberry plants, says Charles Armstrong with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. But growers aren't quite out of the woods yet, Armstrong says they must wait for cool September nights to help the berries turn red before damaging overnight frost set in.
That's really what makes the climate in Maine so conducive to cranberries is our cooler nights in late September. And typically the first week of October has traditionally been when growers have harvested.
Armstrong says in Washington County, cranberry growers saw less rainfall, and some farms had issues unrelated to the weather, such as fungal infections. Armstrong recommends looking for locally grown cranberries at farmers markets in the coming weeks, as they won't be around for long. The fall foliage season is officially underway in the northern half of the state. And as Kevin Miller reports, Maine's tree color experts say this could be a good season throughout the state.
As of late last week, all of northern Maine was showing, quote, moderate color, meaning 30% to 50% of trees had started to change. Meanwhile, low amounts of fall color were reported in Maine's southernmost coastal communities and across the strip of forest stretching from Jackman in the west to Holton in the east. The rest of western, central, and coastal Maine was still pretty green. But this past weekend's chilly nighttime temperatures will only accelerate that change. And Gail Ross, who is the official fall foliage spokesperson for the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry, said the state received just the right amount of rain over the summer to set the stage for a vibrant fall season.
Right now, it seems like the foliage reporting season is right on track with northern Maine reaching peak the end of this month into the first week of October and the progression following suit after that.
Fall is still a busy time for Maine's tourism industry. Acadia National Park, for instance, drew more than 500,000 recreational visits just during October of last year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, how some residents in Maine mobile home parks are finding ways to work together to take ownership of their communities. I'm Nicole Ogrisco. Thanks for listening.